Podcast today's show at rte.ie/today with Sean O'Rourke.
And lots coming in on 51551. That's our text line about 1916 and other subjects. Bob says, if those buildings, those are the ones in Moore Street, were anywhere else in the world, they'd have been renovated years ago and been open to the public, where most of the cost would have been recovered by now. What a disgrace. Every time I walk down Moore Street, I look at those buildings and they are in a pitiful state. Another listener, no doubt RTE will hijack the 1916 celebration with the same old boring anti-nationalist Z-list celebrities. Where do we get them? Another one says, why not go the whole hog with your death worship and destroy Dublin and kill over 350 innocent civilians? I know what that one is about. Shouldn't commemoration of 1916 be centred on the GPO, which the leaders chose as their headquarters, rather than their place of retreat? The Americans used to think the GPO was the size of Yankee Stadium because every Irishman they met was in there in 1916. And lots more. They are not all gone. Joe Mallon, son of Michael Mallon, is still alive. That's absolutely true. I met that man in Hong Kong over 10 years ago. He is a Jesuit priest in Hong Kong, and I think he's well over the 100 mark at this stage. Interesting to note if he will be brought back or if he might be in a position to come back. He's been there for a long number of years, and he met President Mary McAleese on her official visit to China in the year 2003. And just another reminder, by the way, about that new feature we're introducing in the next few weeks. It's going to be called Your Stories. What we want is for you to send us in one sentence about something that has happened in your life, and then we'll get a special guest to read a selection of them in a special bulletin. It can be about anything from something your mother-in-law said or something you said to your son-in-law, to the flight you missed or the lovely plant in your garden or the dinner that you enjoyed or the disastrous house you bought. We won't be using any names. You can email your story to todaysor@rte.ie. Text us on 51551. Just remember to put your stories at the start of the text or email, and of course we welcome old style letters and postcards to todaysor@rte.ie. Dublin 4. Now, it's highly likely that at some point this morning you have used a Google product. You've searched perhaps for something. You might have sent an email using Gmail. You've looked something up on Google Maps. Maybe you watched a video on YouTube. Probably people looking at that Muhammad Ali fight with George Foreman in Kinshasa 40 years ago today. Google's ambitions are ever greater. Earlier on, for instance, today, we heard about their efforts to launch a cancer-detecting pill. And to give us a flavour of what Google is and how it operates and where it might be going, I have in studio with me Adam Maguire, technology and business journalist here in RTE, and also Marco Herbst, technology entrepreneur and owner of Evercam. Adam, Marco, thank you both for coming into studio. I suppose a lot of people would say, well, you know, we know about Gmail, we know about Google search, but Adam, it goes much further than that, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have the Google search platform for a start, which is the core. Gmail is the email service. There's also Google Maps, which people probably use on a regular basis to check the location of something or to get directions. You have the likes of YouTube, which they bought back in 2006. So that's pretty much any video will, you know, in the world will go up on YouTube. They have just a phenomenal breadth of services, and you know, part of what they do as well are these kind of crazy out there ideas which end up being products like Google Glass. And they also have the Android operating system, which you may not even realize it, but your phone or your tablet runs on that, and Google owns that as well. So it's really a massively broad company in terms of things that it does.
And Marco Herbst, it started off, I think, as a great big search engine, which was to design, or it was aiming to help people to find what they needed to know using the internet. But now it's become a great big advertiser.
Right. Well, that's where the money comes from Google, which makes it such a powerful and interesting company. The original search engine, they decided to make a search engine for a king. So it was intended just, you know, if one guy who has unlimited resources wants to know one answer to one question, how can they, you know, deliver the best answer? And that expanded and expanded and expanded. But yes, I mean, their money all comes from now advertising based on search queries.
And the trick seems to be that based on the information that you give them, they tailor the ads to target you.
Right, exactly. So as you're using the internet, and even not necessarily Google sites, but other sites that might be carrying advertisements powered by Google and so on and so on, or as you're using your phone, Google gets to learn more about you, the routes you travel, the things you care about, your sort of patterns. And based on that, they're able to give you more accurate advertising.
So clearly great opportunities there. And I think you and your own business, Marco, have been able to buy services from them based on keywords which led you to the people you wanted to get talking to, or at least you wanted to target them.
So what got me interested in the company initially was when we were running the website jobs.ie, the online recruitment site, which is basically a service whereby there are employers looking for people and then people looking for jobs. And our job is to put those two together. So on one side, we're trying to get job seekers to come to our site. And on the other side, getting the employers. But Google is the perfect starting point there. So we were able to buy keywords, like, for example, jobs Dublin, and pay for every person who clicked on that to come through to the site. That's the basic fundamental principle of how Google ultimately makes money. And what was really interesting for us was this huge differential. So today, somebody looking for a French-speaking sales job in Dublin to a recruitment agency, getting that person into a job is worth about 3,000 euros. Right? So the idea of identifying the person who's in Dublin and is looking for a French-speaking sales job, right? Potentially that person is worth 3,000 euros. They've typed those keywords into Google. The idea of paying 5, 10, 15, 20, 50, 100 euros to get that person onto your website makes sense. And Google can prove it in a way that other advertising media find it really hard.
Adam, there must be many more examples of how it can be made specific to particular needs or opportunities, aside from the one that Marco has been telling us about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, if you think about, you know, the things that you would do, especially say if you have an Android phone, for example, and the location setting is switched on, you give away an awful lot of information which Google can learn about you. So it knows where you go and, you know, where you might work, where you live, and even just when you're searching, just normally, it knows from your internet connection you're in Dublin, you're in Ireland, your language preferences, and so on. If you use Gmail, it can pick things up about what emails you're sending back and forward. If you're going to be getting a flight in a couple of weeks' time, it learns this information, and all of that is gathered together. It sounds a little bit intimidating in some ways because, you know, people feel like they're giving this information away. Google assures everyone that it's completely anonymous and it's not being tracked in any way, but it uses all of this information to get a really good picture of you. And the more it knows about you, the more targeted those adverts can be.
You had a recent experience, didn't you, in traffic?
Yeah, I was trying out an Android phone and I switched on the location setting. Didn't think much about it. And a couple of days later, I had a message pop up and tell me 15 minutes before I left work saying, you're about to leave work. Here's the route home. Here's what the traffic is going to look like. You know, it's quite heavy today. You might want to go a different way. And that was without me telling it where I worked, where I lived and what time I went to and from work.
What had you given them or let them know about your movements that allowed them to send such a very relevant and specific message to you?
Yeah, it's a service called Google Now, which is on an Android smartphone. And I activated that service and it ran in the background. And it's meant to, you know, prompt you with things that might be of interest and you can do voice searches and so on. But it's running in the background at all times. So it's picking up all of this kind of passive information without you necessarily telling it anything. And it gathers this picture. And I said it was a bit jarring experience for this, you know, device to know all of these things about without me actually telling it. But this is kind of part of what Google does. And it actually sells this as a positive. It says, you know, we can look at your calendar and say you've got a meeting in an hour's time. You're 45 minutes away and the traffic is heavy, so you might want to leave now. And also it's raining in that location, so maybe bring an umbrella with you. So, you know, so it sells this as something that's actually a positive, that it can use all of this to your benefit.
What about Google Now then? Tell us a bit more about that, Marco.
Okay.
It's not Google Now then, it's just Google Now, I should say.
Yeah, well the problem that Google faces is it did very well as a search engine where people want to go and ask it a question. But inevitably, just the way technology moves, it was going to lose that spot. So it has to expand and extend. And the ambition there is try and get the person before they've even asked the question. Try and know, what are you going to do next? Right, next, it's your lunch break. And is there a question there of where you're going to go for lunch? And can I suggest to you a place for where you're going to go for lunch before you've even asked me where to go for lunch?
And that might just happen to be one of their clients who's paid them to put the name of their restaurant your way.
Well, that is basically the idea.
Yeah. And that was the same service, of course, Adam, that you were able to at least have the option of gaining or using. Now, I talked about this, and it's on the front of the Examiner this morning, a really interesting story. Google's latest project involves detecting cancer by swallowing a pill that it would be packed with tiny magnetic particles which can travel through a patient's bloodstream, search for malignant cells, and report their findings then to a sensor device that you wear. This is from, is it what they call their X division?
That's right, yeah. Google X, which is kind of a semi-secret division, kept at arm's length from Google. It's actually physically located separately to their main offices in California. And the idea is that it's staffed with a team of people who don't have to worry about the day-to-day running of things and all of the products they already have. And they're encouraged to do what they call moonshots, which
are the blue sky thinking department.
Exactly, yeah. They carefully try not to use that phrase because that's very old business, but they say moonshots. So, you know, these crazy ideas that are what they say, almost sci-fi-like, just on the verge of what's impossible. So this product is one of those, something that might detect cancer and cells and the possibility of a heart attack. The likes of Google Glass come out of that. They also have a self-driving car.
Yeah, well, just Google Glass. You tried that, did you?
I tried it briefly, yeah.
So what is it?
It's effectively, it looks somewhat like a pair of glasses that, you know, so you put it on, it has a little lens sitting at the front in front of your eye, and it essentially projects a small screen into your field of vision, and the idea is that it will show you when you get a notification on your phone. It will pop up so you can read the text message there, you can search for things, you can play games and all of this kind of thing. And this is part of this whole wearable technology, and Google think this might be a way, you know, again, you can walk around with the map in the corner of your eyes, so you don't have the phone out in your hand looking at it all the time. The problem with it is that it looks a bit weird. I don't think people
thank God for that.
Yeah, and I don't think people necessarily like the idea of, if I'm sitting talking to you wearing Google Glass, am I recording you at the same time, because there's a camera built into it? So, you know, there's issues around that. But this is kind of one of their big ideas that they think could catch on.
Marco, the idea of driverless cars is not at all far-fetched, is it?
They're up and running. Google owns official legal driving licenses in America for their vehicles. So their cars are legal on the road, and they have cars that have travelled more than 2 million kilometres without any accidents. So that is a real technology. It's only a question of sort of the slow-moving process of litigation and sort of legislation that's going to stop that coming onto the streets.
How far away are we from seeing it in regular use in some city centres? No doubt it'll start in California.
You know, I think the driverless car is going to be one of the defining society-changing technologies in the next couple of years. And I think as soon as we get a couple of them out there and people really start to see how wonderful that is, that this vehicle can turn up, pick you, take you away, it's going to happen very, very quickly. Because the technology is technically ready. It's only a question of it, you know, getting some other sort of roadblocks out of the way.
Could make Liz O'Donnell's job an awful lot easier, and they might have far fewer accidents on the road. Who knows? She's going to be there for 5 years at least. Jerry has texted in to say, Adam, and you might like to address this, why is Google always portrayed as a friendly, fun-loving and harmless company when they're in fact a sinister information-gathering company?
Well, that's the interesting kind of divide between people who look at Google. On the one hand, you can't deny that their services are extremely useful. And it is an opt-in service. You don't have to go to google.com. There are alternatives out there. You don't have to use Google Maps. There are alternatives out there. But they make the services very accessible, very easy to use, and very advantageous as well. But the reality is they're doing that so that they can learn more about you and they can then sell the ads on. That, you know, they have this motto about don't be evil. And there's the debate, an ongoing debate about whether they are or are not evil, or whether they've breached that motto. And it really kind of depends on which side you fall. Do you trust them enough, or do you feel that the benefits you get out of using Google are enough that you're willing to hand this information over? And do you trust that when they say, you know, this is all anonymous, no one is sitting on a computer at the other end reading all of this, it's all in a big, you know, it's just done by computers. Do you trust them with that, and do you trust that they're not going to have that information stolen on you as well?
Marco, you actually have visited their headquarters, which I gather made quite an impact on you.
Yeah, it's an amazing experience over there. And here in Dublin as well, they have a very impressive office. But I did find it, you know, there's two different worlds, parallel worlds. One where everybody is sort of young and beautiful and smart, it seems. And, you know, the everything in the shops are free and there's laundrettes there to take your stuff for you. And then, you know, you step back into the real world. And I was comparing it a little bit to the book Brave New World, where there's the savages, and then there's this sort of actually dystopian, beautiful future in which everybody lives. And it's very, very impressive what they've got going on there. It's too early to tell how sustainable that is, and what the long-term impacts are. But it's worth seeing.
In the meantime, you've got, I think, a couple of projects yourself. You have a company called Evercam that you think that there could be an arrangement whereby Google would help you to link up, or at least to make CCTV cameras much more productive.
Yeah, Evercam has nothing really to do particularly with Google. But the business that we're in is working with cameras, and particularly the world of security cameras at the moment. And in relation maybe to the world of privacy, right now there are companies collecting data about us all the time, and there are cameras that are looking at us by and large, like everywhere we go in a city, certainly. And there's very, very good European law around that, which says that any company that collects data about you, you own that data. It actually belongs to you, and you can ask the company for it, and they must give it to you. But there's certain areas where that isn't being properly applied. And one of them would be the world of cameras and visual information. And the reason is that that technology, it's this closed circuit television. It's very hard to actually practically deliver back information from cameras. So as it happens, our whole business is orientated around allowing software developers to do things with closed circuit television, connect it up to social media, open it up a little bit. And one of the applications there is to empower people to actually be able to see what is being recorded about them on cameras.
And I think one example would be you could get your own film of how you ran in the City Marathon a few days ago.
Yeah, so that's a real sort of real world example of how it could be deployed, because you're running past cameras the whole way. And like I say, in legal terms, you own that data, and the problems that we're working on are analogous to that.
Okay, lots more we could talk about, such as I think there's another book about when Google met WikiLeaks, perhaps a subject for another day. We'll leave it there for now. Marco Herbst and also Adam McGuire, thank you both for being with us. We'll be talking food after these.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.